Hi, my name is David Gregg. I serve in the prayer ministry and the student ministry. We're going to look at Philippians 1, chapter 1, verses 12 through 18. I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has really served to the advance of the gospel, so that it has become known throughout the whole imperial guard and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. And most of the brothers, having become more confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. Some preach Christ from envy and strife, but others from goodwill. The latter do out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. The former proclaim Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, but thinking to afflict me in my imprisonment. What then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is being proclaimed. And in that, I rejoice. Yes, and I will rejoice.
Thanks, David. Well, we are in a series walking through the book of Philippians, and we began the series a few weeks back looking at Paul's initial relationship, how he formed this connection with the church in Philippi. And we are told of that story in a different book of the Bible, one called the Book of Acts. The book of Acts is all about the first story of the church going to a variety of different cities, so it makes sense that the church in Philippi shows up in that story as well. We read about that story in Acts chapter 16. And what we were talking about as we looked at that is when Paul was helping people follow Jesus for the first time in that city, as he was helping people become Christians for the first time, the result of that, or at least one of the results of that, is that he was thrown in prison. He ended up being thrown in jail. While he was telling others about Jesus, that led to him directly being put in jail. Well, he eventually gets out and continues his ministry, but now Paul is writing this letter to this church in Philippi, once again in prison. And it's the exact same thing that landed him there once again. Look at Philippians 1, starting in verse 12. You could do so. We have the bulletins that were passed out. The passage is right there on the front of it, or if you're borrowing one of the Bibles in the back, it's on page 1164. Or if you're trying to navigate through your Bible, you have a really helpful table of contents. It is great to find different places in the Bible. There's never any shame of using it. I use mine all the time. Or you can, of course, follow along with this slide. It says this in verse 12. It says, I want you to know, brothers, and we could just really quickly put, and sisters. Whenever the Bible talks about brothers, about the church, it is using a collective noun, and it sounds masculine, sounds just for men, but that's not what it's meant to capture. Different languages have collective nouns that are gendered, but are meant to capture both men and women. That's what brothers is here. He's not just talking about the men in the church. He's referring to all those in the church as his, in this familiar sense, being his siblings. It sounds less good to say, I want you to know, fellow siblings, but he's saying brothers and sisters here. So I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that what happened to me has really served to advance the gospel, so that it's become known through the whole imperial guard and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. Now, right there again, he brings up his imprisonment, like he did back in verse 7. And while he could say, man, the reason why I'm in jail is I have this message and the Roman Empire just doesn't like it. Or I was talking about Jesus as this king and wouldn't you know it, it goes against Caesar, and so the church, they put me in jail for that. But he correctly understands that the ultimate cause, the ultimate reason for what has happened to him is for the gospel. That's the ultimate cause here. Now, we're only 18 verses into the book of Philippians, or at least we will be by the end of our time together this morning. And already, he has brought up this word gospel four times, in verse 5, 7, here in 12, and we will see in verse 16. Gospel is a word that shows up quite a bit in churches. You have gospel churches. You have the gospel according to Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. You have gospel that shows up quite a bit in Bible verses, and so the church talks about it for that reason. But while the word gospel shows up all the time, I think it's important for us to pause and try to think of what is meant by that. This seems important for us to understand what's going on in the letter of Philippians. He's brought it up four times. We should probably know what he's talking about. But it's also important for us to understand all of life by. We want to understand the gospel, not just so we can understand Paul, but also so we can understand why it's so important to all of us here. In its simplest sense, the gospel is good news. This is the most literal, the dictionary definition of that word gospel. It literally means good news. And while that's a really simple definition of it, I think it's quite sufficient. I think if we just took away that piece of it, the gospel is good news, that's good enough for our purposes. That already puts us better off than many Christians in being able to define what the gospel is. But it does come with a natural question, doesn't it? Why? What about it makes it good news? And that's where what starts off as a really simple definition begins to spiral in every direction. Because while the gospel is good news, as this really simple understanding of it, we find out that it has a way to impact, to touch every area of life. Let's just add one step to it. The gospel is good news. Why? Well, it's because what Jesus has done. The gospel is the good news of what Jesus has done. When Paul goes to prison, it's because he was telling other people what Jesus has done for them, the gospel. When we talk about Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John being gospels, they tell the story of what Jesus has done, the gospel. When we talk about all the time the cross or what we're saved by or anything in the church, we're always talking about the gospel in the sense of what Jesus has done. But even that can be added to it. Ultimately, when we think of what Jesus has done for us, we think of the cross. We helpfully put it here on the tower. Churches tend to put the cross everywhere because that's what we go back to at such a significant time. Jesus died this death that he did not deserve so that we could have life. What makes this good is that he goes to the cross. His death, resurrection mean life for us. That is good that he has done for us. But even that's not enough. So what else happens because of it? Well, this is only possible because Jesus is God. He's come down from heaven to earth to draw near to us. We trust in the cross that as our sufficiency to be saved, it's enough for us. There's nothing that needs to add on to it because it accomplished everything. He makes a covenant, a promise with us. But it's not just a story that we tell in the past that impacts our very lives that we live out now. We're now able to live in the way he calls us to because of the cross. And it's also not just the story of our life, but all of creation begins to be put right, be put in place because of what Jesus accomplished on the cross. And already the definition is starting to spiral out of control. Let alone the fact that we can click any one of those parts and dive deeper into more and more of what Jesus does that's good there. What starts is a very simple definition. The gospel is good news. Why? Because Jesus has done it. Well, what does that mean? It goes out of control. It touches everything. It goes into every single part of our lives. And so we start to realize that there's not one area of my life that is untouched by this good news. And so we begin to examine all of life, but in light of the gospel. The gospel impacts everything. It is about what Jesus has done, what Jesus uniquely has done to bring about good news for the entire world. Every facet is impacted because of what he's done. Every facet is impacted because he came back to life. The reality of the empty tomb means there is genuine good news. And that is why over the course of 18 verses, Paul brings up the gospel four times. But even more importantly, that is why every single part of those 18 verses are written to us. It's because the gospel exists. We said in week one, Paul says, grace and peace to you. How is that possible? The gospel. We talked about last week that even in bad circumstances, God is always bringing about good. God is always working. How do we know that to be true? Well, the gospel. Our passage this week only happens because of the gospel. Even though he only brings up the word four times, every single word is impacted because of the gospel. All that he has done, all that he is doing is because of the gospel. Because the gospel impacts everything. Now, let's get back into the text. He says in this verse that what has happened to him, his imprisonment that he's experiencing, ultimately, the reason why he's there is to advance the gospel. All right, one more thing that we can add that's good about the good news. And he's talking about it right here. The gospel is not static. It's not an ancient story that only happened in the past, but it's something that is continuing on to today. The gospel is always being advanced. It is by its nature dynamic. It's progressing. The gospel is always on the move. In our first week in the series, I talked about how we're all praying about the prospect of potentially adding on a third service come January. And the reason for that is I drew our attention to our mission statement of what the mission of this church is, that everything we do as a church comes from this statement. I particularly drew attention to that first word. It's smaller than some of the others, and so maybe we overlook it, but it says building. That is in the active tense. We don't want to be a church that one time in the past did something, but we are continuing to build, continuing to be part of the work that God is doing here. And the reason for that is not because we want this to be the best church in the world, or the only church that you can go to, or the only fit for every single person. Calvary is going to be great, so we need to build its name up. No, the reason why we are always building, always part of the work of the church, always continuing to progress in this way, is not for Calvary's sake, but if we are part of the gospel's work, then we will always be built. The gospel is always being advanced. It is always going out to new people. It is always making an impact in people's lives. And so the work of the church will always be doing the same thing. If we are going to be part of the work that God is doing, then we will always be dynamic because the gospel is. We will always be building because the gospel is always building. We will never be static because the gospel will never be static. It is always being advanced. Now, what Paul is talking about here, what is leading to the advance of this of the gospel in this way, is actually his imprisonment. And that seems counterintuitive. I mean, wouldn't it be so easy for Paul to say, God has called me to go to the ends of the earth to preach the gospel? Oh, I guess I can't do that anymore. I'm in prison. Hey, God has called me to give freedom to all from their sin. Well, I guess that part of my life's over because I'm now in chains. Wouldn't it be so easy to think that his work is done? God has called him to preach the gospel, and now he's stuck in one place. He literally cannot do that anymore. It must be the end. God's going to choose someone else instead. No, Paul says, even though I'm in here, even though this seems like it has put an end to my ministry, me being in here is actually helping to fulfill my ministry. Even though there's this massive obstacle, it seems like it's in the way, like I can't go around it. There must be something else for me. No, it's actually turned into a tremendous opportunity for the gospel. In other words, the gospel is good when things are not. Paul is still able to see the good of the gospel even when he's in such a horrible situation. Let's go back to verse 12. I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel, so that it's become known throughout the whole imperial guard and to the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. And most of the brothers and sisters, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. So Paul is able to see the genuine good that's going on in his life, with the gospel being advanced, with people being filled with confidence, that God is still working through him, even though he's imprisoned. This hasn't turned into an obstacle. This hasn't put an end to his ministry. No, his chains have actually turned into a chance for the gospel to go to new people he would otherwise have no access to. And what would otherwise limit his ability to do the work that God has called him to do, what would otherwise feel like such a shameful thing, being thrown in prison at this time in an honor-shame society, there's no coming back from that. There's no job opportunities for ex-cons. There's no path to build your life back up. If you are thrown in prison in an honor-shame society like this, your life's done. You have no prospects after this. For him to go through what would have completely derailed his entire life, he still sees so much to be full of confidence with. He still sees so much genuine good that's coming from the gospel, even though his circumstances are anything but good. We talked last week about how when we are going through difficulty, we can still be full of gratitude when we see that God is always working around us, especially in the lives of other people. Other people can be, here we have the reverse of that idea though. Other people can be deeply impacted. Other people can be grown in their closeness of following God, even as we are going through difficulty. So last week, we can find the good even in hard times. This week, other people can find good when we are going through hard times. It's a slightly distinct idea, but as we are the ones going through difficulty, other people can be strengthened and encouraged and actually follow Jesus because of how we navigate that. Look at verse 13. It says that it's become known throughout the whole imperial guard that his imprisonment is for the gospel. Now, that's not because they read his case file. That's not because they've been briefed that, you know, Paul's here because he won't stop talking about Jesus. No, they know that Paul won't stop talking about Jesus because Paul won't stop talking about Jesus to them. They know that he's there for the gospel because he's using this place where he is as a way to preach the gospel. Paul's imprisonment has not stopped him from preaching this. Rather, being a captive has allowed him a captive audience. These guards, he would otherwise have no opportunity to tell about Jesus. They would be on their duty. He would not be allowed to get near them, but they're right there in the midst of him. And so he's telling this community who would otherwise not hear of the gospel. This opportunity that he has only because he's imprisoned has allowed for new places for the gospel to go. And it's in here, as he's going through hardship, that other people begin to believe, begin to be encouraged, begin to have life after death that's found now in Jesus, because Paul is here. He's continued his preaching ministry. He's continued telling others the good news that's found exclusively in Jesus to even those who are guarding him. The very people keeping him as prisoner are the very people he's helping to liberate through the good news that's found in the gospel. While he is going through difficulty, others are being strengthened in the faith because he is going through that difficulty. You add on top of that, verse 14, it says other people are becoming much more confident in the Lord. I mean, you would think, seeing Paul, an initial figurehead in the church, the one who planted so many churches, the one who's dedicated his life to following Jesus, who even says, use me as an example of following Jesus. When he gets thrown into prison, shouldn't that blow the whole thing up? Shouldn't that make people say, I don't want to face that? And if Paul is having to endure this hardship, if he is having to go through all this, man, what hope is there for me? I don't want to go through that difficulty. I don't want to face that shame. I don't want to go through the hardship that he's going through. No, actually the opposite has been true. The church is stronger because Paul is in prison. No longer is it just relying on Paul and his ministry to advance the gospel, but other people are stepping up as well. Other people are becoming more confident in the content of the gospel as well. Other people are part of the advancing of the gospel. And that only is happening because Paul's in prison. Because Paul is going through difficulty, when other people see that, they're actually stepping into the work that God has for them. They're actually growing more confident. They're following Jesus closer because of the example that's given to them of Paul in experiencing this difficulty. I think this is a side that I don't touch on very often. I think we're really good, and I think for good reason, of saying when we go through difficulty, we are not meant to do that alone. There is a church around you that's to be a support to you. None of us struggle or need to struggle by ourselves. None of us are meant to go through hard times by ourselves. The beauty of the church is that you always have people to surround you, to gather around you, even with all the hardship that life throws at you. That part is true. That will never not be true of a good church. With that, we talked about last week that we don't want to get so far into that that we only see the bad that's around us. We miss the good that God is doing it. It is only looking at the hardship of life. That puts us into a side where we're in danger. That's dangerous to miss all the good that God is doing around us. But here we have another side to avoid as well. To not pretend like things are always okay. To not downplay the hardship. To not act as if the difficulty that we're going through is nothing. To stay silent in the difficulty, whether that's from pride or, you know, I don't want to be a bother to other people. I don't want to be a downer to them while they're having a good day. That too is damaging. And the reason why it's damaging is not just because we lose out on the resource that's meant to help us. We lose out on the church that's meant to be an encouragement to help us follow after God when we are going through difficulty. But Paul is helping us to show that when we stay silent in the difficulty of life, others around us are worse off because of it too. It's not just us who miss out, others miss out as well. Because it's when others here get to see what Paul is going through, the hardship that he is enduring on account of the gospel, that allows them to be more confident in the gospel, them to be closer to Jesus, them to be part of the work that God is doing. It's because others get to see that Paul is being faithful even in chains that they recognize the freedom that comes from Christ for the first time. People believe in Jesus for the first time because of the hardship that Paul is going through. We are not meant to struggle alone. But the other side of that, I know this sounds weird, but your struggles are not for you alone. As others get to peek in, as others get to gather around you in that moment, as others get to know what it is that you're going through, they get to be a support to you, yes, but they also get to be strengthened as well. Don't be selfish with your struggles. I know this leaves us navigating a really narrow pathway. On one side, it's everything is awful all the time. There's no good. There's nothing God is doing around us. That is a bad place to be. We talked about that last week. On this side, it's pretend your difficulties don't matter. They're nothing. Downplay them. Your hardship. You just got to knuckle through it. God will do something in the midst of it. That is dangerous as well for us and for others. That leaves a really narrow road to try to navigate in between. But here on that road, not only do we find reality, that things are not worse than they truly are, things are not better than you need to pretend they are. It is only here that we find reality, but it's also only here that we find an experience that God wants for us to grow close to him, to grow close to others, for others to be shaped and guided by what he's doing in our life as well. That's the place that Paul is calling us to be. And it's through that lens, as Paul is navigating that place, that we're allowed to see that the good that comes out of difficult circumstances. Because Paul's circumstances are truly horrific. But he's able to still look around and see the good that's coming out of it. Good that God is doing around him, but the good that comes from the gospel being worked out in his life, even in the hardship. The good that's being produced in the lives of others around him who get to peek in, that people are being strengthened by what it is that he's going through. I don't think I did a good enough job of this last week as I talked about, don't just focus on the bad, but find the gratitude around us. There's so many people who've been such an encouragement to me in this church for that exact same reason. As they're waiting for operations or appointments, or they're recovering, or they've experienced a loss in their family, or a job loss, or something that has tested their trust in God, and being able to say, but I still trust in God in the midst of it. When people have done that, that's been such an encouragement to me, because it causes me to ask, would I do the same thing? Would I be grasping onto God as much as possible, as much as they are in there? I think, now I might. Because I saw them do it. And now I might because I saw how faithful they were. There's so many people in this church that's been such an encouragement to me for doing exactly this, who were not selfish in their struggles, but now I'm closer to God because of what they've done. To navigate that narrow way, everything is not as bad as it could be. God is still working. Everything is not roses and we need to pretend otherwise, because in the midst of difficulty, God works in us and in the lives of others. All right, one more part to this passage. And that is, the gospel is good when others are not. Paul, at the end of our passage, talked about, while so many people are being strengthened or receiving the benefits of the difficulty that he's going through, others have seen the power vacuum that's been created, the leadership vacuum, with Paul no longer being out of prison, and have jumped into leadership positions, but with wrong motivation. Look at verse 15. It says, some indeed preach Christ from envy and rivalry, but others from goodwill. The latter do it out of love, knowing that I'm put here for the defense of the gospel. The former, those who do so from envy and rivalry, proclaim Christ out of selfish ambition. Not sincerely, but thinking to afflict me in my imprisonment. What then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed, and in that I rejoice, yes, and I will rejoice. While some are being impacted for the good because of Paul's difficult circumstances, others have acted in a way that's entirely not good. Their motivations for proclaiming the gospel, for jumping into ministry, for claiming these leadership positions are truly awful. Look at the words used to describe them. They're preaching Christ from envy and rivalry. They're doing so from selfish ambition, not sincerely. Even looking to go against Paul in this, to afflict him in his imprisonment. All of this is talking about their character, their motivation for stepping into these leadership positions in the church. But I want you to notice, what is he not talking about here? All of this is talking about their motivations, their characters, their character for doing this. He isn't once bringing up the content of their message. He isn't once attacking what it is that they're saying, just their reasons behind saying it. This is radically different from what we find elsewhere from Paul. I think of Galatians chapter 1, where he's talking about these false teachers who have come in, and they're preaching a different gospel. They're coming up with a different thing that Jesus did. They're not looking at the good work that Jesus has done. They're saying other things, or you need to add to it, or take away from it, or believe something else. Paul was telling you all these lies. Believe us instead. And in Galatians chapter 1, what he says to these false teachers who are changing the content of the gospel, he says, you got to stop. He completely stops them from proclaiming this false truth. He doesn't stop this group. He doesn't say they're to stop at all. Instead, he rejoices twice. He rejoices that they are doing this. Even though their character is wrong, even though they're the reasons why they're doing this is wrong, it's deeply, deeply flawed. Paul says the problem is not their content, but their character. Here's from what we can gather, from the best we can tell from situations, but also the wording that's being used here. When Paul was imprisoned, other people began stepping up to preach where he couldn't. And it seems like a lot of their language might have been, especially since it's described as envy or rivalry or selfish ambition, a lot of their language must have been like, man, now that Paul is gone, we can do things the right way. He's been telling people the right things, but, you know, he's been holding us back from doing ministry the way it should be done. And, you know, Paul's not as gifted as we are. Paul's not as great as we are. We can come in and we could do a better job than Paul. Or maybe it's talking about their motivations for doing it. It says it's described as selfish ambition. Their motives for preaching the gospel could have just been, you know, Paul has a bit of a following. I want that. Paul's getting some acclaim. I don't mind that as well. Whatever it is, their motivation for preaching the gospel, their character is flawed, even if their content is correct. It's interesting that Paul seems to be pointing out that fellow Christians can be more cruel than prison guards. But think about how we might have seen that in our day. Someone seems like a gifted preacher. They're clearly talented. They have gifts in this. They're a great communicator. They maybe even have a tremendously successful following. There's a lot of people to show up to hear them teach. But then it shows out that they have a massive character flaw. Maybe they are acting in a way contrary to the gospel, or they're not living up to the life that they called other people to do. That even though things seemed good in their content, in their ministry, their character leads to it all blowing up. Or maybe someone's motivations is the reason, is the connection here. Maybe they like being up on stage, not as a platform to build other people up for the gospel, but as a way to build themselves up. Or they see the very, very small number of preachers who make a very, very large income and said, I want that. Whatever their motivation behind it, if it's not helping people follow after Jesus, if it's something else, even if they're gifted in this ministry, that character piece proves that they're disqualified for that ministry. And Paul is not overlooking anything like that. He's not minimizing people who go into ministry for the wrong reasons. That's not the way things should be done. He calls out envy and rivalry elsewhere. He calls out selfish ambition. He holds people accountable to these things. But what is different than Galatians 1 in this passage is instead of people preaching wrongly and need to be stopped, he says that people are acting wrongly, but at least the gospel is going out, that Christ is proclaimed, and that is what causes him to rejoice. What I think that Paul is showing us here is that even when we experience someone with these massive character flaws, someone who is genuinely not doing good, it does not remove the good of the gospel. Now, there's a lot that churches can do to hurt people. A lot, much more than there should do. There's so many stories of failures in the pastorate, and none of that should be overlooked. None of that should be minimized by any means. The hurt that it causes does not get removed. But since the goodness of the gospel comes from the content and not the proclaimer, there is something good to still be found in that church. Your faith, let me put it this way, your faith is not dependent on my spiritual health. I recognize sometimes those can feel intertwined, but if my life were to blow up, and I desperately ask for your prayers that it doesn't, but if my life were to blow up, that doesn't change what God has done here. That doesn't need to overshadow that connection that you had in a Bible study where you got to experience God more closely. That doesn't take away those times that you were singing here and you didn't feel like singing. You had a hard week, and yet the church around you in hearing their voice helped you to connect with God in a desperately needed way that Sunday. It doesn't change even some of the words that were said on a Sunday. Like, man, I'm closer to God because of how this passage was shown in the life of our church. Even though it can feel like all those things are connected, that's not true. Yes, it can be damaging. Churches can hurt each other, but none of that can overshadow the gospel. You are saved and nourished and impacted, not because of who I am, but because of what Jesus has done. That is what's good about it. And nothing can ever take that away. Paul looks at the church and said, these guys are going about it the wrong way, but lives are being changed. People are following Jesus. That even with their flawed character, they're able to see the flawless Jesus behind the message. Even as people preach with these character flaws and so become disqualified, nothing that they do can detract from the goodness of the gospel. But I think as well about the position of these preachers that are talked about in this passage. They come in with envy and strife. These are words that can cause division, but they're also comparative words, aren't they? Envy is, I see what they have and I want it. Rivalry is, I see what they have and I'm doing better than they are. They're these comparative type words between what they want to do and what they saw Paul doing. They're thinking now with Paul out of the way, now they get to do things the right way. I wonder how much we might fall into that camp. How do you talk about other churches? Do we get excited about people coming to Jesus there? Or the impact that they're making in the community, the life change that we see happening in the lives of others? Or do we get more critical? As we're assessing the songs that they sing, we just do this little backhanded statement of like, oh yeah, the concerts they do on Sunday. Or when we evaluate their sermons, like, you know, they don't even open their Bible all that much. It's just a self-help time. Or we look at their programming, their events, and just scoff. Why are they spending time on that? My concern is it could be so easy to look at a place where God is working. And rather than seeing that part, the impact of the gospel, to take this position of these preachers, whether from envy or rivalry or whatever comparativeness we want to do and think, they're just doing it wrong. Even if we would do things differently than a church, in our evaluations, do we first go to our preferences or do we go to the gospel? Man, I don't even think they can articulate the gospel, but I can see people are believing it. I don't even know if they're singing songs that reflect what Jesus has done, but clearly this is a place that's shaped by it. Rather than going to their songs are wrong, the preaching is wrong, which we mean it doesn't line up with our preferences, do we rush to see that is a place where God's working? That is a place full of fellow brothers and sisters. That is a place where the gospel is being proclaimed. All throughout this section, Paul keeps coming back to the gospel. I'm in jail for the gospel. Your spiritual health comes from the gospel. You're believing in the gospel. You're becoming confident in the gospel. The gospel is advancing. Even people doing things wrong are still proclaiming the gospel. Everything in this passage keeps coming back to the gospel. And so should we. All that we do here as a church flows from it. Why do we say that we're Christ-centered? Because what do we do if we center our life around Christ? We happen to find the gospel, what Jesus has done, and what's so good about it. Ultimately, what we find in him is the gospel. All that we receive as a church is by it. Why do we continue to talk about what Jesus has done in the past? Well, because our very basis of who we are now comes from the gospel. Everything we hope for in the future comes from the gospel. All that we have as a church, all that we do, everything we believe, all that we are, comes back to what Jesus has done and why that is so good. To Paul's larger point, even in difficulty, we can still see the good that's in the good news of the gospel. And really, that should come as no surprise to us. Because think about how we received the gospel. We have God himself a savior of the world, draw near to us, come to this world, be closer to him than we've ever had possible before. And what does he do? He dies on a cross. That ought to seem like the most difficult of circumstances. The end to all the work that God was going to do. Just an obliteration of anything possibly good. But it's from the cross that the good news is made possible for us. It's from enduring this difficulty that the very salvation we are desperate for is realized. How do we see that there can be good even in bad? Whether it's bad circumstances or bad preachers or bad blank, whatever you want to fill that with. How do we still see the good of the good news when there just seems to be so much bad around us? Well, it's because by its very nature, what makes the gospel good is that Jesus has endured the worst. Jesus has broken through the most difficult of circumstances. And Jesus himself died so that we can have life.